I hope you paid very close attention during the last hour. A lot of very important information. When the mayor bans the police department of a major city like Portland, Oregon, from using their LRAD sonic crowd dispersion units, you got to smell a rat. And then look at the other story that we talked about. Rent a Riot. Huge online business. Total intelligence, total planning. You got the money? Do anything. It's all right there. All right, we're going to talk to Dr. Henry Nyman this Friday evening on our week-long events. New events today. A couple of things for you. Confirmed coronavirus cases rising faster than ever, according to a new report. This just out today, CNN. New cases of the novel coronavirus are rising faster than ever worldwide at a rate of more than 100,000 a day over a seven-day average. In April, new cases never topped 100,000 in one day, but since May 21st, there have been less than 100,000 a day on only 5 days. That's it. So there you go. There's one. There's another one here. Newest coronavirus hotspots include California and the South. Let me read a little of this. Mass protests against police violence across the U.S. have public health officials concerned about an accelerated spread of the coronavirus. But even before the protests began on May 26th, sparked by the May 25th death, allegedly, of George Floyd, several states have been recording big jumps in the number of cases. All right, well, we forecast this. Henry did. Yours truly did. Elsewhere than our hour together. A pretty easy call. Iran braces for new coronavirus wave after surge in infections. So there you go. There's a lot going on, even though it's not in the news, as we pointed out the last couple of programs. It's not in the news. But here it is, big as life. Welcome back, Henry. Happy Friday.
Well, good Friday to you. It's good to be back. And there are cases going up. Actually, a couple reports came out for Arizona and Phoenix. Banner Health held a news conference. Their ICU's filling up. And they're concerned about the large increase in cases in the last week or so. And Utah is concerned about cases going up also. Phoenix, I'd put out an update probably 2 or 3 weeks ago on the Italian strain being almost exclusively present in the sequences released from Arizona, which are primarily from Phoenix. And the numbers overall are creeping up, particularly on the number of cases. The deaths are a bit delayed. But what you started with is more cases than ever. That's really largely because of a combination. One is the Italian strain is fully encompasses Europe.
Yeah.
Europe. So Europe has had some of the higher rates. I mean, they've slowed down a little bit, but the UK, which thought they would let it ride for a little bit, has suffered the consequences, and that's why I said yesterday they were number two in deaths, right behind the U.S. So they've got 40,000 deaths, and they're up there like number five. Some actually have number four in total cases, and they lead Europe if you don't count Russia, which is got cases in Europe and Asia. So the UK is number one in Europe. And the reason the cases are going up worldwide is the virus hasn't gone away in the U.S. The U.S. is still doing 1,000 deaths a day. And cases, today the number was up. The number was, I think it was closer to 28,000 cases. Now, part of that was because they redid their website for, let's see, it was for Michigan. Michigan had not included the probable cases. Most of the states per CDC instructions are supposed to report both the confirmed cases as well as the probable cases, because they know that a lot of these cases were missed, and even when you add in the probable, it still ends up with an undercount. And Michigan had kind of kept their probables. I don't even know where they were, but they weren't very prominent. So they had confirmed cases there, and then they redid their website today, and it definitely says confirmed and probable and gives you the total of the two. So you add those in. They had, for today, they had 5,000 more deaths or cases than they had yesterday, and they had 260 more deaths than yesterday. So both of those are big numbers, mostly for those adjustments. But the country really got over 28,000. So even if you take away 4,000 or so for probables that hadn't been counted previously, and in Michigan it would still be 24,000. So that's a higher level. It had dropped down to about 20,000 a day. So 24,000, a bit of a jump today. Even if you don't count the jump in Michigan, if you do, there's 28,000 cases today, and a little over 1,000 deaths. So the deaths are still on the lower end, but the cases are going up overall. Phoenix and Utah are two of the states that have increases in the last week or so, and today they both had good numbers. And Minnesota is another one. That's part of the reason there's concern about the demonstrations that Minnesota has been reporting increases in cases, and there's also increases in the Washington, D.C. area, both in Maryland and Virginia, which would be locations that would feed into the Washington demonstrations. So there is concern. These concerns have been voiced previously, but now with the numbers starting to go up as the restrictions are being lifted, and the increases in worldwide cases. I mean, the main drivers of those increases, apart from Europe, which is it's not a new driver, is Brazil and Russia, both of which are have moved up to number two and number three behind the U.S. And they're both adding cases very quickly. Russia's not adding that many deaths because they're lying about the deaths. They're essentially putting them in different categories. So they have plenty of deaths. They just don't count them as COVID deaths. But Brazil does, even though they don't have that much testing. And I think Brazil has moved into the number two slot now. And so they've, let's see, on deaths, they're up to, number three, you count the U.S. So they're at 35,000. They're right behind the U.K., which is at 40,000. And they both have passed Italy, which is at 33,000, and Spain, which is 27,000. So it's really these, top five that are driving it. If some of the lists have Spain as being below the UK, so it's really the top four if you don't include Spain. And the numbers are going up in all four of those countries. And then a lot of the other countries that you hadn't heard that much about mm-hmm. are starting to add cases. I mean, India has moved up to number six now. They've actually got more cases than Italy. And, you know, some of the cases in the Middle East are up there. And then Mexico has actually started to make a little bit of a move. Mexico, it's got over 100,000 cases now. And Saudi Arabia is right behind it with 95,000. Canada has 94,000. So, yeah, essentially, the virus is fully entrenched worldwide. It's got cases going up both in the northern and southern hemisphere. It'll be interesting to see what the southern hemisphere looks like, where they've already got the virus there well ahead of the cold weather, and whether the cold weather is going to cause numbers to, you know, it's basically jump in South Africa or South America or Australia. It would be the three major geographical regions where there could be significant movement because there's already cases. Australia is a mixture, but the other ones all have the Italian strain. So that was one bit of news that came up. The cases really are going up. I sent out an early release MMWR that came out today, and they kind of highlight the influence of our president on his playing doctor, and so he said, bleach sounds good. And so people are actually using bleach. They're washing their fruits and vegetables with bleach. They're putting it on their skin. They're inhaling it. And
it's posted now. It's up. They're inhaling
so
bleach.
Better.
They're getting. Oh my.
Yes, they've got. Yeah, they're all up. And it's high enough that they wrote up an MMWR. I mean, they didn't do it that large of a survey. It was only 500 people, but I mean, the percentage was alarming. It was over 30%. I think it was close to 40% of U.S. citizens are taking unnecessary risks by basically using
disinfectants,
similar
bleach. This is all on Trump. Trump owns all of this, every bit of it.
Right. He said it looks good to him, so they figure out, you know, 39%. Or engaged in non-recommended high-risk practices with the intent of preventing SARS-CoV transmission, such as washing food products with bleach, applying household cleaner or disinfectant to bare skin, intentionally inhaling or ingesting these products. Not surprisingly, residents who engage in high-risk practices more frequently reported adverse health effects that they believe were the result of using cleaners or disinfectants than those who did not. And public messaging should continue to emphasize evidence-based safe practices such as hand hygiene and recommended cleaning and disinfection of high-touch surfaces.
Mm-hmm.
Should emphasize the avoidance of high-risk practices such as unsafe preparation of cleaning and disinfectant solutions, use of bleach on food products, application of household cleaning and disinfectant products to the skin, and inhalation or ingestion of cleaners and disinfectant. So that gives you an idea that, although most people know he doesn't know what he's talking about, not all of them do, and they kind of think that if he said this is a good idea and it works real well, and he had a scientist make a presentation on how susceptible the virus was, and he says, oh, there's got to be a way to do this, you know, it gets in the lungs, you know, it could be targeted there. And, you know, I don't know about UV light. They didn't really talk about it, what people do with UV light bulbs. But anyway, the...
Hopefully it was an external use.
No, he said he should get it inside the body.
I know.
So he wanted people to be innovative and come up with a way to get at that virus in there and zap it. And anyway, he did have a press conference today, and he said that the COVID problem was pretty much behind us now. So it's, he calls it cheerleading. I call it, I don't want to talk about what I call it. But anyway, not accurate, let's put it that way. That the idea that is behind us when the numbers are going up in both the northern and the southern hemisphere at the in June, you know, it's not April anymore, it's not May, it's already June, and there's evidence of the numbers going up in several states in the U.S. and it's going up in Russia, which is well into the northern hemisphere, and Brazil, which is in the southern hemisphere, and they're going neck and neck to see who can. Neither one of them stand much of a chance of catching the U.S. and anytime soon, but they're kind of battling it out for number two, and I'm pretty sure Brazil's going to win that, at least on the reported cases. I'm not sure exactly what Russia has, but I am sure that they have a lot more deaths that they reported. Their deaths are like a tenth of other countries that have similar number of cases. But another development front, there was kind of a bad news on the science front, and that was two of the papers in highly prestigious journals, the Lancet and New England Journal of Medicine, were retracted, and these were on hydroxychloroquine, and the reason they were both retracted was because the company providing them with the clinical data on the patients is now highly suspect, and so they don't consider the data on the patients that they gave them as being reliable, and therefore they really couldn't vouch for the studies because, I mean, that was a key driver of the studies. It was basically, how well patients responded to various treatments, and how well they really responded is kind of suspect. It's kind of unclear from the two retracted studies. Now that doesn't really change the overall situation. There are zero scientific studies to show hydroxychloroquine does anything. There are smaller studies that didn't use this third-party database. They basically did their own patients to it. So one in the VA that came out a couple of weeks ago and showed no benefit, and actually showed that the ones with hydroxychloroquine did worse. There were more deaths. And there was one that just came out that was more of a prophylactic study, and that also showed no benefit for hydroxychloroquine with by itself or with zinc or with vitamin C or with azithromycin. It didn't matter which combination. None of them seemed to really make any difference. So, you know, the overall data that's in says it doesn't do much and it may be harmful. There just aren't as many studies with these two that were larger studies that were retracted. And it's not really clear, you know, what was going on there. They just, the authors of it had used this smaller company that had provided the clinical data, and now it's not clear how reliable that data is. And so the authors of that study didn't want to, you know, let it stand because they couldn't really vouch for it. And they ended up, both of those studies were retracted today or yesterday or so.
Yesterday,
and so that's a little bit on the science front. There are still, you know, a large number of vaccines that are in clinical trials. I think there's something like 10 now that are in patients. The data is really not in. Some of them have expanded to phase two now, so they're boosting up the number of cases, and it's still a little bit concerning that the Italian strain is becoming very widespread. It definitely has a change, and the spike protein is near an area that was associated with antibody enhancement. And it's in a region that's involved with immunodominant type of response. So there's concern that the vaccine, which is made against the original Wuhan strain, may not protect as well against the Italian strain. And there's the additional concern that because of that difference in a key region, there may be this antibody enhancement so that the vaccine may work against a couple of the lineages, which are not all that common anymore. They're still around in some locations, but the locations that are having these rapid increases in cases, it may be an issue, and by the time the vaccine's ready, there may be further changes in these particular lineages. There's already three different versions of the Italian strain, and
are they equally as virulent? Approximately?
It's hard to split them up because they kind of go in the same places. So, I mean, if you look at New York, one of them's a little more common than the others, but the others are more common than anything else. So, you know, it's these studies haven't really been that fine-tuned yet. You know, when I looked at them, I was just looking at geography and see, well, of those, how many are the Italian strain? I mean, all of them have that change in the spike protein. So the Italian lineages, they all have the spike protein, and then one of the strains doesn't have a whole lot beyond that, and the other two each have changes in other genes in the virus, and that what distinguishes them. So that's why I say they're all the Italian strain. And if the spike protein is the key derivative, it's not clear that the other ones make a big difference. And it's probably too early because they there's different combinations. When I looked at them initially, I was just looking to see whether they had that change in the spike protein and the associated changes with it. I mean, there were four changes that were in the original Italian lineage. There was one of the spike protein, and then there were three other changes. And so all of the ones that are the Italian lineage have all four of those changes. But there's a couple of additional changes to kind of break them out into additional versions. And those numbers are probably going to be going up. Those are the ones that have been kind of defined, and they're currently at similar levels. The frequency of each of those three versions of the Italian strain are about the same. But the virus changes over time, and there will almost certainly be other versions floating around by the end of the year, and and they may be fairly dominant. I mean, we'll know soon enough. Like I said, I think that when the schools open in the South in August, you're going to see some dramatic increases, and whether those will include a new version of the virus or not is still a little bit of an open question, but you'll get an idea what's circulating in the U.S. anyway. And those, I would think, would come out pretty quickly as far as the sequences are concerned, because most scientists are expecting a new wave, and most scientists are expecting that by the fall, there's a good chance that there'll be a new version. And there may be a bunch of versions of the virus floating around. It hasn't been around that long, and it hasn't, as you had said, it hasn't got that high of a percentage of the cases in most of the places. Therefore, some of these current versions may do significant damage, because their ability to spread is somewhat dependent upon the season. It's also somewhat dependent upon just the density of the population. And that's why when school opens up, it's hard to envision how they're going to really control it in those types of environments. I mean, they can ask students to wear masks, and they can kind of limit the size of classes, and they can try to do something on shifts. So that, part of
it really sounds impossible to me, Henry. I don't know how they can do it. But with a 17-foot radius of an exhalation, come on. It's 6 feet thing doesn't work.
I mean, if you just keep going to this closed environment multiple times a week, and it's just too transmissible, like you say, for there to have any confidence that there's going to be that type of success when you do that. And schools are apparently going to try to do that. I don't know, how long it'll last. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if the 1 month's worth of trying to do it in the South would be enough to draw the conclusion that this is just a disaster in the making. And that at least colleges, I think, I think they all will, because the parents won't want to send their kids to school. And they'll say, we did the learning by computer, offsite in the spring, and it's probably too early to kind of switch back to try to get it done in the school. And so the schools will be faced with the kids that go to school are getting affected, and a large number of them won't go to school, and so they probably should have some type of education set up. And it might even out that way. I mean, they get enough kids that don't go to school because they you know, just want to take it online, that might reduce the density. But I would think they'll also get resistance from the teachers. The teachers will look at it as too dangerous to bring all these kids into their classroom. And they'll say, well, I'll teach online, but, you know, the on-site learning is just too risky for everybody involved. So I just don't see it happening. I can see a start, but I don't see it being successful. But I think that it might start for long enough to give a significant boost to the spread of the virus, because we're starting at a much higher level than we were in the spring.
We got a running start now.
Because in the spring, you know, they were coming in. I said there was a lot of virus, but there weren't, you know, 20,000 cases a day. You know, it was, you know, there might have been 20,000 cases in the U.S.,
right,
but not the 20,000 new ones every day. And so there's plenty of virus here. And that's why I say pandemics, you know, the number of pandemics that went away in a season or in a few months or in a year or in a few years is zero. There haven't been any. They all lasted many years, and the only reason they went away is they got replaced. I mean, they were all flu, but they all got replaced by another version of the flu. So there was always flu circulating, and when a new serotype appeared, it lasted for many years, and then when it went away, flu didn't go away. Just the one serotype was replaced by another serotype, and I think it'll be the same thing with this. The milder cold viruses are around and have been around. It's not like this OC43 or this 229E, which are mild cold viruses. Are things that used to be around 20, 30, 40 years ago, and you never see them anymore. You don't hear about them because they're just cold viruses. I mean, people get a cold and they don't even go to the doctor. I mean, so it's not like it's something that makes the news because there's, cold season and people have sniffles. They just, you know, that's a given. They expect to have that. It's not, you know, really a news story. But that's kind of how it's setting up. And the fact that the numbers are going up in the summer, you know, what you quoted with CNN, you know, I said it's going up because, you know, a couple of countries have a lot of virus and it's spreading very quickly. But, you know, it's not just those countries. That whole list of countries that have now passed, China is due to the fact that, this Italian strain is pretty widespread. And so it doesn't have to show up in the U.S. to get a lot of cases. I mean, it's hard to get 2 million cases, which is what the U.S. should have by the beginning of next week. And, 2 million cases is a lot, and it's a lot more than anybody else. And it's primarily because there just was very limited testing, because the U.S. really wasn't present, and nobody was planned on doing anything about it. It was a virus that was, you know, going to be gone in a few weeks and definitely be gone by April.
And, well, that's what Jerry kept telling Donald, and Donald believed him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the example that that's because they didn't know the difference between a pandemic and an epidemic. So, you know, the general public may have trouble defining that, but there are certainly people that would be advising the president, you know, that could be advising the president that,
yes,
you know,
don't take anything for granted.
An epidemic is a localized thing, and we didn't have any SARS cases to speak of. And so it didn't really go away from the United States. It never really came. There were just a few mild cases that didn't transmit. There wasn't even a community transmission in the United States. It was simply, you know, cases that were imported, most of which were affiliated with the Metropole Hotel, and they were the milder versions. And, you know, as I've said before, that how sick you get is frequently dependent upon what kind of dose you get. So if you get a low dose of the virus, you might get a mild version and have it resolve and never even go see the doctor. If you do see the doctor, they might make a big deal out of SARS because they were concerned about it. But it wouldn't be based on the fact that you got pneumonia and you got a 10%, you know, chance of dying. It was just because you tested positive on the test for the virus.
All right. And here's some good headlines for you. You ready? And these are good. These are today. All right. U.S. to stockpile millions of COVID vaccines even before they're approved by the FDA, said Tony Fauci. Fauci says U.S. may have millions of vaccine doses by early 2021. Donald said today the U.S. already has 2 million coronavirus vaccine doses ready to go, untested, unapproved, whatever. Donald says we've got 2 million ready to go. I'm sure he'll be first up to try it out. It's just nuts.
Well, no, I mean, that is part of the plan. I mean, the way vaccines are usually done is they go through the clinical trials, and the vaccine companies know that issues can arise in the vaccine trials, that they may look safe, you know, when they have a small number of cases that are tested, and they might look like, well, they made some antibodies, so that might be protective. But then when they expand it, they can run into issues where a larger sample size has some type of problem with the vaccine. So it's questionable how safe it is in a large population. And then they may find out that if they're testing it and their people are vaccinated and they basically enter the season. I mean, for flu is an example. And if they get a flu vaccine and flu season starts, then they will be able to see how well the vaccinated group did versus the non-vaccinated group. And usually the way the vaccines work is that they want to get approval before they spend the money to expand the vaccine. And, you know, and so what they're doing with the current vaccines is there's an urgency to it. So the U.S. is paying the pharmaceutical companies to go ahead and expand the vaccine before the results are in. So the ones that he's got are ones that are in clinical trials. So they're not like, you know, something, well, why don't you guys try this out? This is something that the companies have gone through the preliminary steps, the preclinical work has been done, and phase one's already been done, and so they're getting ready to go into phase two. And instead of doing it sequentially, where they wait until the vaccine trial is over and then build up their inventory for distribution, they're getting paid to build up their inventory now. So I wouldn't doubt that they've got 1 or 2 million doses of one or more of the vaccines that have started the clinical trials. That's what the goal is. So the goal is to have the vaccine ready. So as soon as it makes it through the clinical trial and it's approved, you don't have to go ahead and scale up and wait until there's enough vaccine to start distributing it. You can start distributing it immediately. Yeah,
I understand. It sounds ass backwards to me. It just sounds ridiculous. It sounds bad. You get it approved, you get it tested, then you produce it. Oh, well, it may take a little longer, but you aren't making millions of doses or something.
That's the difference. Yeah. And to avoid it taking longer, you just spend the money. I mean, they know how to scale it up. They can do it. Mm-hmm. It just takes money. It takes money and time. But if you do it while the trial's going, then you don't lose any time. You actually have the vaccine.
It's a parallel. I get it. Yeah.
And so the U.S. is paying the money for it. So it's not like they're gambling and they're going to spend, hundreds of millions of dollars to make the vaccine. And then
Donald
find
didn't
out
tell
that
me we were paying
worthless.
For this. Gosh.
Well, it's out there. I mean, that was part of the program. It's the U.S.
I'm sure they'll have as much money as they need.
And it's not even just the U.S. They're paying for the, I'm pretty sure they're paying for the one in Oxford, because I think that's being done with AstraZeneca, I think. But whoever it's being done with.
Moderna is the one that's doing the primary. That's the one Donald is claiming we've got 2 million, I believe. Let's see. The National NIH has been fast-tracking work with Moderna on a potential vaccine to prevent da-da-da. Fauci said earlier this week that there are at least 4 trials of potential vaccines that he is either directly or indirectly involved with. Fauci said by the beginning of 2021, we hope to have a couple million doses. Donald says we have them right now, ready to go. So Donald, once again, is leading with his mouth.
Yeah, well, they're
he's saying the opposite of what Fauci is saying. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he may be saying it. They've got the protocol ready to go, and they've done the first step on these 2 million. But
well, November's getting closer. That's it.
They're not in the bag yet. Yeah, November's going to happen before the vaccines are there. If they had the vaccines, they wouldn't know whether they work. I mean, Moderna, for instance, is requires 2 shots. So you get one. I don't know how far. Usually, they're at least 2 weeks apart. They might be a month apart, and so it's going to take several weeks before people even have the full dose, and then it takes a couple more weeks. Before they've got enough antibodies, and then for it to work, they'd have to, then see people aren't being infected, and then it takes a little while to figure out what that frequency is, and then it would also take a little while to see if there's no enhancement, and the enhancement may that would blow the whole thing.
What does enhancement mean? I don't know what that means. What does it mean?
Enhancement means that it's been seen with different viruses, including coronavirus. And that means that if you get infected with one strain and you make antibodies to it, those antibodies help against that strain. But then if you get infected by a related virus that's a little bit different. And the vaccine doesn't work that well on the related one. You can actually get a situation called antibody enhancement, where the antibodies for the first strain actually facilitate the ability of the second strain to enter the cells. So you end up, so the vaccine works for the first strain, but it makes it worse for the second strain. And that actually happened with a vaccine for dengue. And that was the reason there was so much anti-vaccine activity in the Philippines. And that was, and that ended up leading to a high incidence of the measles in the Philippines, because people heard about this problem with dengue. And then they said, well, if it didn't work for that vaccine, it probably doesn't work for any vaccines. And therefore, they're not going to get vaccinated for the measles. And so the vaccination rate went down in the Philippines. And then they had a major outbreak of measles there because not enough of the population was vaccinated for it. So that same type of antibody enhancement has been seen for some experimental vaccines in SARS, for coronaviruses. There might have been MERS, but I don't know. It was SARS or MERS. It was a coronavirus. And so they know that what happened with the dengue virus can also happen with the coronavirus related to the SARS-CoV-2. And that's why that's been one of the red flags out there, that they have to worry about that. And they don't want to run into a situation where they make the vaccine works against virus number one, and number two comes along, and number two is able to infect it at a higher frequency. And that's why there's concern about a fall wave, because there's a good chance that the virus that does best in the fall will be different. It will have evolved, and it will have a selective advantage. And it will be different enough. And all of the vaccines that I know of that are being made against the Wuhan strain. So this antibody enhancement could conceivably happen with just the Italian strain. The Italian strain may be more effective against people that have had the original Wuhan strain, which is the same strain that's being used for the vaccine. So regardless of whether you have antibody because you got vaccinated against Wuhan, or you got antibody because you were naturally infected with Wuhan, either way, if this enhancement effect is in play, then you'll have a worse case of the Italian strain. And that's why I say it usually sets up for that. And so this is just how viruses evolve, and how, you know, there's kind of selection of the fittest. And that's why when you have, in the case of flu, which is somewhat seasonal, when you have that first virus in the spring, the situation in the fall is much worse. And that, you know, essentially what happened in 1918. And that's essentially what happened in 2009. And so those two are fairly well documented, and people kind of know, you know, most of your listeners were at least around for the swine flu. And, you know, if they recall, there was a lot more virus in the fall than there was in the spring. There were a lot more cases.
Oh, yeah. And I remember.
It was kind of like light and day. And so that could very well happen for COVID, where we're in the fall, where they had excessive deaths. It's not going to be in in, you know, a handful of cities. It's going to be in every city.
Yeah, I'm afraid.
And so the number of cases, instead of having 100,000 cases, mm-hmm. you're going to have a million cases, or not 100,000 cases, 100,000 deaths. You're going to have a million deaths. So saying that these predictions that there were going to be 1 to 2 million deaths in the United States are greatly exaggerated is way too early to say that. You know, if it's this time next year, during June of 2021.
Time is the only thing that's going to determine it. Quote of the day, Bill Gates says, Gates' conspiracy theories are stupid, says Bill Gates.
Most scientists will tell you that. Virtually every scientist will tell you that.
Bill stood right up and told us.
And I can go through that. I know he told you. He knew what was happening. He's not an idiot like the guys who do the conspiracy theories. I mean, the conspiracy theories are interesting to see him stand up. They don't understand how every research institution in the world has a technology transfer agreement. They all file patents. Mm-hmm. on their inventions. So if they're mm-hmm. going to be commercialized, they can license it out. That is SOP. It has been SOP for decades, and the conspiracy theorists think they discover something every time they read a patent, and they go like the health ranger who reads about a cell line, and he says they're going to be killing millions of monkeys. That was bad.
Okay, we got to run, Henry. Thank you for another fascinating week. We will see what happens next week.
Okay, have a good weekend. We'll see you next week. Take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Good night. Dr. Henry Nyman. Okay, back soon. Well, we'll be back. You can listen to the network anytime, hear the programs if you're a subscriber. You can hear any of the programs that we have in the archives. Over 20,000 hours of programs. Fascinating people going back 27 years of service beginning this June 23rd, 24th, coming up. All right. Have a good weekend. Take care. Stay informed. Eat good food. Keep that immune system functioning, and we'll be okay. All right. We'll talk soon.